Obamacare is here to stay.
Tests, office visits, pills, hospitalizations. What do they all actually cost?
$330 billion with a B.
Marks the beginning of open enrollment in the health insurance marketplaces.
This is confusing.
You're listening to Health O'Clock, show number 2. Recorded January 23rd, 2016. This is your source for health news, trends, and insights. So now it's time to talk about healthcare. I'm Andrea. I am a health actuary. We've got Jay sitting over there.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
So I've got to give you my normal disclaimer. That, yes, I am an actuary. I used to work for a health insurance company. I work for a consulting firm now. I don't represent either one of them in the show. I don't represent my employer. I don't represent the Society of Actuaries, etc., etc. So if you actually need to hire an actuary for actuarial work, go hire one. That's my disclaimer.
That's a good one. I am a normal guy. And as a normal guy, I want everybody to know, at no point will I represent Doritos, or will I ever represent the Queen of England.
Oh.
So, it's just out there. There's, if you need to contact them, I'm sure they have people and emails and whatever.
Yeah, well, I was confused before that, so I'm glad you cleared that up.
Well, anyway, thanks for listening. This is our second show, and today we're going to be talking about big pharmacy.
Big pharmaceuticals. Does it really cost that much? And this has been in the news a lot, so we thought it would be a very timely topic. There's a whole issue that Jay's going to talk about later in the show with a certain famous person. Infamous, really.
Infamous.
We'll talk about him later. Also, there's a lot of squawking from different political entities talking about the cost of drugs. And so we thought we'd throw our two cents in.
That's right. So let's boil it down. There's a lot of talk about big pharma and problems, and they're made out to be this big, huge, evil company or big entity. What is the actual problem here, Andrea?
Well, Jay, there's a lot of problems that lead to drugs costing as much as they cost. The first problem is it's a non-elastic market. So in non-economic textbook terms, that means if you've got to go out and buy a life-saving drug, you've got to go out and buy a life-saving drug.
You have no choice.
It doesn't matter whether it's $10 or $100. You're going to have to buy it. So that contributes to higher costs. People don't stop buying if you raise the price. So number two?
Yeah. The U.S. is the only developed country without drug pricing regulations.
This is actually a big deal, and it gets discussed very rarely. Actually, I didn't know this until I started researching for the show. I knew that there weren't a lot of pricing regulations in place in the United States, but I found out that pretty much every other country in the world who's got a health infrastructure has some kind of control on drug prices, and the United States doesn't.
Yeah.
I want to read from a quote from a book called Money Driven Medicine by Maggie Mahar. I don't know if I'm saying that right. This is maybe an older book. It was written in 2006, but it's talking about all the different costs of healthcare. And I found an interesting quote in it talking about lack of regulation in the United States. So I'd like to read that to you.
Okay.
Virtually every other developed nation regulates or negotiates prices for healthcare products, either by setting reimbursement rates for new drugs based on how they compare with existing products, Japan, capping profits, Britain, putting a ceiling on total spending, France, or insisting that once a product is on the market, prices cannot increase faster than general inflation. Canada.
Wow.
In the United States, by contrast, drug makers and device makers are free to price their products at whatever the market will bear.
Interesting. So drug companies here in the U.S. have a little bit more power to pad their wallets with big home run hitting drugs that people rely on.
Right. And that phrase is so interesting. I keep seeing that phrase over and over again, whatever the market can bear. It's up for discussion. What can the market bear? And whose idea of that is, who's setting the prices based on that idea?
I agree. That is very interesting. All right, now there's a third point. In the U.S., these pharmaceutical companies are for profit. They will only develop drugs that will make a profit.
That's an interesting point. There are some drugs for very rare diseases that it's very difficult to get research and development on these drugs because so few people are going to need to buy them. If you notice, these big pharmaceutical companies focus on conditions that a lot of people have, like cholesterol problems, sleep issues.
They advertise during baseball a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those. apparently, a lot of people have that problem.
I guess.
What they focus on is how can we make a profit? How do we select a subsection of the market, the greatest number of people that may possibly purchase this drug? Because, again, they're a for-profit company.
Yeah.
And they want to make money. Again, I found another quote from the same book, Money Driven Medicine, which I will now read to you. From 1995 to 2002, pharmaceuticals took first prize as the nation's most profitable industry, reporting earnings that range from 13% profit to 18.6% every year. Put those numbers in context. Over the same span of time, the average Fortune 500 firm, so non-pharmaceutical, just Fortune 500, posted earnings that averaged just 3.1% to 5%.
That's crazy.
So, the difference there, I understand they're a for-profit company. They need to make some kind of profit, keep their shareholders happy.
Sure.
But at least from this quote here, it seems...
they're being greedy.
Excessive. It seems excessive.
Yes. That's kind of an eye-opener. Now, here's something I've always wondered. There's tons of television advertising going on with these giant pharmaceutical companies and advertising drugs. Can you speak to that? What's the strategy here? Why is there so many television commercials about drugs?
Well, and that's a really good point, too. And I have a site here. It's from BBC News. And they have listed the world's largest pharmaceutical firms and their profit as a percent of their revenue. And then they also break out how much they spend on research and development and how much they spend on sales and marketing.
Ooh, interesting.
We've got some of the largest companies in the world. And one of them in particular I want to highlight. How do you say it? Pfizer?
Pfizer.
Pfizer.
Yeah, Pfizer.
Which is a U.S. company. In 2013, made $51.6 billion in revenue. Of that, they spent $6.6 billion on research and development. So you kind of see the span there between, it costs so much because we're researching it. They spent $11.4, so almost double of their research and development fund on sales and marketing, which we'll get back to your question in a minute, Jay.
Shocking.
And they made $22 billion in profit, which is a profit margin of 43%.
Holy mackerel.
Which is just crazy. It's crazy. It's huge. So going back to why they always cite their research and development, but so then why is their sales and marketing fund so high?
That's a good question. I have no idea why prescription only company, or like say they make a prescription drug, are advertising to us average Joes that we can't write prescriptions.
Right, because they always say at the end, ask your doctor if blank is right for you.
That's right.
These ads work. They wouldn't do them if they didn't work.
Sure.
So you have people going into the doctor and saying, I think I really need some of that Cialis. I think that's the ticket for me. And usually doctors will say, let's look and make sure you have that medical condition first.
Okay.
If they're good doctors. But a lot of times that will sway what they prescribe. Maybe before the customer, the member, the patient, before they had asked, maybe the doctor would have prescribed something else. You don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
So the marketing and sales, and a lot of it they spend on those direct ads, but some of it they spend advertising to doctors.
Interesting. So is there advertising? I assume that doctors get that the normal public would not.
Yeah. Oh, they'll go in and they'll sometimes they'll do a big sales pitch for doctors. Sometimes they'll take them out, wine them and dine them, give them a whole bunch of free samples. This could affect what doctors end up prescribing.
Wow.
So, yeah, big sales and marketing budget. It's there because it works.
Because it works. Wow. That's interesting. Wow. Huh. Well, I see a lot more problems with the big pharmaceuticals, which make medicine that saves lives. But at the same time, it's also they're doing it for wrong reasons and making profit.
Right. But then you could also argue that if it wasn't for profit, maybe you wouldn't get the amount of innovation that you get. There would be no incentive for anyone to actually develop these drugs. So you have two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
I tend to fall on the side of these profits seem excessive. But again, I've never worked for a pharmaceutical company. There may be some truth to them saying, yeah, a lot of this goes towards research and development. And yes, we do have to spend that much on marketing to stay in business.
Wow.
So I don't know. I think they're excessive, but take that with a grain of salt.
I think most of America agrees with you.
I did want to tell you, I was in an actuarial conference last June, and I sat in on a session where they brought in people from pharmaceutical companies to talk about how they determine prices for these products.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. So they've got a room full of actuaries, a lot of people who have worked on healthcare pricing, a lot of them for most of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting here listening to people representing the pharmaceutical company, sometimes doctors, sometimes analysts, saying, here's how we price it. We look at what could have been saved by using current methods available, and we price it taking all that into consideration.
Huh.
So, for example, the hepatitis C drug, they looked at the cost of a full length of treatment over the whole lifetime.
Of the patient.
Of the patient. And they said, well, our drug cures it, so we're going to charge what it would have cost over the whole lifetime and boil it down into this one...
One big installment
one
payment.
One big installment payment.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, I could see that increasing premiums all the way across the board.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of what we talked about last week, is this is what's causing your... Well, one of the reasons your healthcare costs, your premiums are going up, is things like this. And you had a room full of actuaries in this meeting saying, wait a minute, that's not how we price. That's not how the government requires us to price, which is look at the actual cost of things and project what they will cost next year, and that's what you charge. That's not how drug companies are pricing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. So they're not charging, okay, we spent X amount on R&D, we spent this much on sales and marketing, this much for overhead costs, and here's the cost. They're not even looking at that stuff. Again, it's what the market can bear.
Wow. That is interesting. Huh. Hey, well, thanks for that story. That's kind of cool that not everybody gets behind those actuarial doors at conferences.
Oh, it's, it's thrilling, let me tell you.
I'm sure it is. All right. Well, now it is one of my favorite parts of the show. Twitter versus Twitter.
So, in this corner, we have Jay, who will be reading a tweet pro-big pharma. And in the other corner, we have Andrea, who will be reading a tweet that is anti-pharma.
Well, my tweet comes from Laura K. Filat. She says, "I don't understand going against big pharma," in quotes. "They develop life-saving drugs and life-improving drugs. Your local pharmacies can't do that."
I'm reading from Hedge Clippers, at Go Hedge Clippers. 20 out of 25 drugs with fastest rising prices are owned or directed by hedge funds. Greedy turning sickness into gravy train.
Now that is interesting. I don't understand how there's hedge funds in charge of these pharmaceutical companies. It seems like the wrong people are driving the ship, if you ask me.
Right. Well, you think about hedge funds, you think about profits, people making money.
That's the bottom
making
line.
Making as much money as possible within the confines of the law, which is what we see right now in big pharma. So yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Huh. Very interesting. Anyway, we're coming into that portion of the show where we realize we have just ingested a lot of information and a lot to really think about.
Yeah, so let's take a mind break.
Let's take a mind break. During this mind break, I do want to bring up a point. I was listening to our show while working out, and I thought, wait a second. Our show's roughly about the same time as a workout. That's just good to know. So maybe if you're at the gym and you're working out, hey, push hard these next couple of minutes.
That was lovely.
I needed that. That was
nice. I mean, we threw a lot at our listeners before the break.
Oh, I know. I know. Big pharma, pretty crazy stuff. But yeah, I think we need to talk about, I've heard this term, orphan drug.
Yes. We mentioned before that drug companies are looking to sell. They're looking to make a profit. So how do you get drugs made for smaller diseases? And by smaller, I don't mean less severe. I mean fewer people have it, but it's a very serious disease and sure, something needs to be developed for it. So that's where orphan drugs come in. There was an old law, I think back in the 80s, where they said, okay, if you develop... Two pharmaceutical companies, our lawmakers said, if you develop some good pharmaceuticals for these conditions, we'll waive some of your taxes. You'll be exempt from all that. We'll give you a pass on some of the requirements that it takes. So that actually, it ended up being a really good law because a lot of drugs were developed for diseases that may otherwise not have been developed.
Oh, so they're playing into this whole pro-profit idea, the government.
Right. Well, and usually in order to make any kind of profit, this kind of law had to be passed, waive some of the costs so the companies actually can make profit off of these drugs that not many people need to purchase. However, nowadays, a lot of times to develop these orphan drugs, you had smaller companies develop them. They don't always have patents.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of seeing larger companies, hedge funds, swoop in, purchase these orphan drugs, and then jacking up the price on it.
I would, if it's all right, Andrea, I'd like to tell you a story.
Please do.
This is a brief story about Martin Shkreli. According to Wikipedia, this 32-year-old is an American entrepreneur and financial and pharmaceutical executive. He is co-founder of a hedge fund and CEO of a biotech firm, Retrofin, and he was also founder and former CEO of Turing Pharmaceuticals. Quite the bio for a young guy. In September of 2015, Shkreli was focus of one of the most widespread internet lynch mobs after Turing Pharmaceuticals obtained the manufacturing license for the drug Daraprim. They raised the price from $13 a pill to $750 a pill. People protested, and Martin quickly earned the title the most hated man in America. Martin's response to the price hike is as follows.
Every other drug price increase, and we have a list of the top 100 of all time, almost every one of those, there was not the same commitment to reinvest the money into R&D. And this is a patient population that desperately needs treatment. You know, there were some so-called experts that were trying to give out advice. There's only two experts in the world on toxoplasmosis, Dr. Reba McLeod and Dr. Jose Montoya at Sanford. UChicago and Stanford, those are the only two groups that have consistently published for decades on toxoplasmosis. And they will tell you from the bottom of their hearts that desperately new treatments are needed because people still die of this disease. So we're going to make a drug that's better. We're going to cure this disease. And I hope, you know, that people realize that that's a good thing.
The outraged Americans got a pleasant surprise on December 17th, 2015. Martin Shkreli was arrested on securities fraud charge. He was accused of running a Ponzi-like scheme when he was CEO of Retroprim. And that brings us up to date on the current drama of Martin Shkreli.
Wow.
I know. What a crazy story here.
So they got him for something else, but technically what he did for the drug was completely legal.
And has been done before by other big hedge fund people.
Just either not as obviously and flamboyantly, or earlier when people weren't paying as much attention or didn't have a way to band together and talk about it. Maybe the internet wasn't as big when it was done before, or maybe for some reason he got attention that others didn't.
This whole story, it doesn't sit right with me. I understand his argument, like, hey, we need this extra money to develop better drugs for this. But at the same time, it kind of feels like he's playing this card as a ploy. And it just feels fake to me. So since this big outlash, he has definitely said, hey, we're going to lower the price. We're going to lower the price just to kind of cool the jets of the national media. But they haven't. And I don't actually think There is a plan to lower it. He claims that they give away the drug 50% of the time to people who need it. I don't know if that's true.
Well, and my actuary brain is thinking, if they're giving away drugs half the time, they've got to bump up the price 50% to account for that.
And they more than did that.
So, yeah, something about his statement, I agree with you, Jay, doesn't really ring true to me.
Yeah.
And it is telling, he works for a hedge fund. Again, they want to make a profit, and this is perfectly legal what he did and is being done by other companies.
Wow.
So I don't know how you combat things like this. I mean, you can request more legislation, but that has its own problems.
Sure.
You can be vigilant, you pay attention to what things cost, and if things are changing, say something.
You know, speaking of the drug prices, Andrea was showing me just, you know, before the show, this new site.
Oh, it's this great site. And this was actually something, I think my mom showed it to me because her doctor pulled it up. It's called GoodRx. And you go out there, you type in the name of whatever drug, and it pops up a list of all pharmacies in your area and what they're charging for that drug.
Which I had no idea pharmacies were charging different amounts for the same drug.
Yeah. Well, and that was something I was also telling Jay before the show. There's this whole system in place where you've got your pharmaceutical companies, and yes, they charge exorbitant amount profits, so on and so forth, but that's not where the story ends. Because then they go to drug manufacturers who actually build and create the drug. They manufacture the drug, and they add on their own profit margin. And then it goes to a drug wholesaler who they take all the different drugs from all the different manufacturers, so the pharmacies can only deal with one wholesaler instead of a whole bunch of different ones. And they add their own margin onto it.
So everybody's tacking on their own profits to this. Yeah,
and then it goes to the pharmacy, and they can tack on whatever they want to it for their operating costs.
It really feels like I'm back in college and I'm buying a textbook. That's just what it feels like.
Well, yeah, same thing. You're paying the author, but you're also paying all of the people that went into, and you're paying
printing it and selling it and distributing it, and yeah.
Right, you're paying the employee at the bookstore who's sold it to you.
Yeah.
Not just the author.
Wow. Huh.
So GoodRx. Yeah, go and check that out if you purchase pharmaceuticals, and maybe it'll help you out, get a little cheaper price.
That's right. Well, it looks like we have made it to the end of our show.
The end.
The end. Thank you so much for listening to us and this broad brush of Big Pharma. I mean, there's so much involved that I'm sure we could do a show on every one of these bullet points we talked about.
We had to really limit down to a few things for you today.
Yes. When you finish this, and if you can do us one favor, and that is going to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're getting our show, please leave us a review. It's really important to let other people know that maybe you're getting something out of it, maybe you're not. Give us 0 stars, 1 star, 2 stars, or 5,000.
5 stars.
It would be great. So anyway, thank you again for listening. I am Jay.
I'm Andrea. Remember, our email is healthoclockpodcast@gmail.com. And our next show will be a special edition on open enrollment, a.k.a. Obamacare.